Welcome to Everything But The Tip, the podcast that bucks the trend of the mainstream golf content being churned out by the masses. Presented by the co-founders of Smart Golf and Fitness, we're on a mission to guide golfers towards genuine improvement. No swing tips, no shortcuts, we're anti-instant gratification. Join us as we navigate the complexities of the game, offering insights on how to truly excel in golf by embracing the challenges and breaking free from the usual quick fix mentality. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. We're very excited for this one, and it is just going to be myself and Tommy tonight. But we're really excited about the topic. As you guys are all aware, the name of the company is Smart Golf and Fitness Instruction, and we've launched about 9 episodes. We've got one specifically for fitness, discussing that topic in depth, but definitely have a lot more to share on that subject. And Tommy's taken the time to write up what I think is going to be a really, really good episode, which is going to specifically highlight the physical screen portion of our assessment and how it plays an extremely vital role in the entire business model in allowing us to help our clients reach their goals. So, on that note, I'm just going to start with a very simple question. But how would you say or why is the fitness component so important to what we do?
Well, Joe, it's great to be back in the studio after a little hiatus there. This is a live podcast. We're just free flowing, but a couple of notes here to guide us through. But why is the fitness important? Why is that fitness component important? Well, it's been a growing trend over the course of the last, decade and a half. So there's, it's no, you can see the athletes, you can see the golfers, they look different than they did in generations past. So that's one of the main elements there. But ultimately, I just want to simplify it. I mean, when's the last time you saw any of your golf clubs sitting in your garage or sitting in your bag move all by themselves?
Not a familiar experience.
Right. So the golf club does not move itself. So what moves that golf club? It's the body. So if we talk about the body and the necessity for it to be able to move the golf club, we often talk about, the golfers being an athlete, and the better the athlete, the better potential they have to be a better golfer. So if we look at some specific parts of the body and how they interact in creating that motion of that golf club, we can start right at the ground. You might have heard people talk about the fact that the golf swing starts from the ground up, so we start with those feet. The feet are your only connection to the ground for your body, as well as, technically for the golf club. So if we talk about the importance of that and why that's important, popular term that a lot of people have been talking about is ground reaction force, so the ability to be able to draw energy or from the ground, from earth, and be able to transfer it through your body and translate that to the golf club and ultimately to the golf ball to make it move. So that's a huge part of power production. If we just take a look at a couple of different sports, for example, we can go a little deeper in some of these analogies later on, but a baseball pitcher, his feet are attached to that mound, pushes off the feet, transfers energy up through the body, up to the arm, and ultimately releases and allows him to throw a 90-100-mile-an-hour fastball. Tennis players, footwork's crucial for them as well. They're moving all around the court. They make sure that they square their feet up. They get into certain positions to hit different shots. But again, you can hear them and see them pushing off the ground to be able to generate rotational speed and power through that tennis racket.
Yeah, I mean, looking at baseball and tennis, and you talk about sequencing, the kinematic sequence, how they generate force, they're virtually identical as how you generate power in the golf swing, correct?
Yeah, it's not coincidental that I picked those two, cherry-picked those, if you will, those two examples there. And then the other one I like to see is like snowboarding. So any type of, snowboarding is a huge rotational sport. You look at, in the half pipe and trying to do the rotations and the 720s and the 1080s and things like that. So they definitely get into the board, they carve into the snow, and then they essentially jump and rotate their body to create all those rotations.
I think I just saw on social media there was the first 1260 ever landed on a skateboard, not a snowboard, but rotational.
Yeah, that's insane. Especially since the, the snow's pretty hard, but imagine not landing that big.
No, it was on one of the, I forget what they call it, but the big ramps where you hit the big jump and then you got to hit the quarter pipe afterwards. But I still, when I saw that, I'm like, man, I feel like watching Tony Hawk land that first 900, which was such a big deal when it had happened. It just kind of unfolded, but yeah, we're old and that happened a really long time ago.
So the last part of that is just, you know, the hands. So if we talk about the main components of the body, you've got your feet connecting you to the ground, and then your hands ultimately connect you to that golf club. So again, when we go back to talking about ground reaction force, power production, trying to transfer energy from the body, okay, our fit body, to the golf ball, that's what's doing it. It's the body there. So we already talked a little bit about sequencing. We'll talk about that a little bit later as we go on, but that's why fitness is so important. So making sure the body is functioning properly, making sure that it can handle the demands that are, you know, required of it to be able to produce efficient movements to hopefully, you know, produce a productive golf swing.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously apparent that a club or really any object cannot move, right, without your body being involved. And what did I want to say? I had a point I wanted to make, and I've kind of spaced out, but... whatever, to keep things rolling on, let's go to the next part. This is always a question we, I think, get a decent amount. But when you think of golf fitness, what parts of the body, or just golf in general, the golf swing, what parts of the body are the most important to focus on?
Well, the classic cop-out answer is it depends.
Yeah.
But if we go back to, you know, the name SMART Golf and Fitness, SMART is a mnemonic again for stability, mobility, assessed, restorative training. So that's kind of what I want to talk about today is our assessment process. I always like to say that if you're not assessing, you're just guessing. So if you've ever been to a golf fitness instructor, if you've ever been to a golf instructor and gone to get a lesson or a fitness session and they haven't taken you towards through some sort of baseline assessment to get some baseline numbers, you know, they're just kind of throwing the next greatest, you know, exercise they got, their greatest hits that they used with the previous client. They might be throwing a drill that way, but they don't really know if it's relevant for you. So same thing applies to those of you that, you know, are trying to do some golf fitness on your own. So those of you who are trying to, like, build your golf swings on your own, lots of information out on Google. You can find a ton of ways to fix your slice. You can find a ton of ways to create rotational speed and power. However, knowing what's appropriate for you is where, you know, the experts come into play. So we talked about, you know, deliberate practice in an episode. We talk about, you know, the prescription model, and that's, you know, what we provide here. So not only just that golf component where you've got golf drills to work on, our fitness sessions, the fitness component here is prescribed by professionals, and we dig into what areas you specifically need to work on so that you're not just wasting time, trial and error, figuring out, oh, does this work? Does this not work? So,
okay, fair enough.
The main purpose.
Okay, so I get, like, it depends.
Okay.
All right, that's always going to be the answer. It's a very common answer in the golf industry in general, and quite frankly, it's the most appropriate answer in most circumstances. But is it even possible to highlight and say, hey, you know what, really when it comes down to the golf swing and the forces that we know that are going to be applied to the body and which are required to put force into the club, are there some areas in the body that you could say are staples that no matter who the individual is, this should be strong, this should be mobile, this should be stable? Are there any areas in which you could say are top of the list?
Yeah, we can talk about that hierarchy in a little bit, but I think I just want to start with just kind of the general, you know, purpose of our assessment. So first of all, we just want to know how your body moves in general. So just looking at every part as a whole. So not, you know, kind of identifying one over the other right out of the gate. So just generally, how does your body move? And then we'll look at what parts of your body are working well, you know, in your golf swing, and then what areas are having a detrimental effect. And we go through an actual process to figure out what those are, and I can highlight some of those, you know, main ones as we get down into that a little bit more. We also want to look at, you know, is there a specific injury or pain, you know, and what areas are causing it. I think you mentioned prior, one of the easiest ways to make a, you know, change in a golf swing is to introduce pain. The body's always going to move through the path of least resistance. It's always going to avoid pain. And we can talk a little bit about that as well. But then, you know, ultimately, if there's no pain or injury, so, you know, when we get a nice, healthy athlete in here that we, you know, want to work with and stuff like that, we also want to be, you know, kind of look into the future perhaps and identify any areas that could become problematic down the road through our assessment. So those are kind of the four, like, general things that we look at there. But as we get through, and I'd like to go through the kind of the assessment process itself, and then we can highlight some of the hierarchy of what's more important than others.
Cool. So let's do this. Let's keep it simple. And sorry for jumping ahead. And I just want to say to listeners, I'm a little bit under the weather this morning. Or that's a perfect example. It's not even the morning right now. So my brain is, I'm just realizing jumping into this podcast is not firing on all cylinders. So it'll be interesting how the rest of this episode goes. But let's do this, Tommy. Let's just talk about how the assessment was developed and what exactly does that process consist of?
Sure. So, you know, my background's in athletic training, again, so I take a little bit more of a medically based approach to my, any of my assessments, whether it was dealing with golf or in prior parts of my career. But essentially, Titleist Performance Institute, TPI, came up with a general screen. The purpose of the general screen was to provide common language and common screening principles for golf professionals, fitness professionals, medical professionals, just to be able to identify some areas in golfers' bodies to see, you know, where they could make some improvements. So there's, you know, 16 different tests as part of the general TPI screen. That's kind of the foundation of our assessment. Coincidentally, there was, you know, 15 swing characteristics. I think there was 16. There might be up to 18. Now they've added a couple as we start to break apart and kind of identify some different ones here and there. But ultimately, those swing characteristics that you have, those things that you may or may not want to appear in your golf swing, they show up because of, you know, or caused or a result of the body not working properly, or again, like I said, taking that path of least resistance.
So, well, you've heard me say in several episodes prior to this one, when we look at the origin of those swing characteristics, you know, that's their gentle way of calling them swing flaws. Usually those are unpreferred swing characteristics. The reason I never liked it called swing characteristics, because there's good swing characteristics as well, and out of the ones that you've displayed, those are usually unpreferred patterns. But
yeah, let's just cut through the shit and call them flaws from here.
Seriously.
But as far as our assessment goes,
I just wanted to finish that thought. Like, and you've heard me say this, but it's like no one picks up a driver for the first time or a 7-iron and says, hey, how soft can I hit this? It's what feels the most powerful, right? And then what does my body do the easiest? And back to what you had said earlier, yes, that's going to be by taking the path of least resistance and making sure I do everything in my power to avoid moving in a manner that could cause injury in the future.
Right. So our specific assessment is a combination of basically those TPI screens that they put together. We've done some education with the Gray Institute and incorporated some of their screening principles in there as well. I've also taken some things that I used as an athletic trainer for pre-participation exams and things and put all that together. So we've got, you know, minimum of about 24 tests we take people through. We also have some power testing. So depending on how long the first, you know, physical screen takes, we might do some power testing there in that initial session as well. We might push that off to our third or fourth session with that person to make sure that we can set some foundational things in place, make sure that we can set them up for success as far as some of that power testing goes. We actually created our own kind of measurement tool. Called the Smart Developmental Index, an SDI. So we weighted all of those tests. TPI did something similar early on as well. They gave you a golf fitness score handicap based off of that same handicap system. We did something with our expanded assessment. So we've got a 100-point scoring scale. Everybody's, you know, looking for A's. So anybody wants to get anything close to 100, but all the different tests are weighted. And as you perform those tests, good, bad, or otherwise, you either maintain your points or you lose some points on there. But that gives us something concrete and something objective that we can measure improvement as we continue to move people through their programs and things like
that. Yeah, just like we quantify a handicap in golf and you try to improve that through that assessment and that SMART Development Index score, we can do the same. If you show up and you perform and you get a, call it 68 for your score, well, our hope throughout our program and the exercises and how we teach you how to allocate your time, we'd like to see that score go up. So anyway, so let's do this. What are you looking at specifically throughout the screen? Like, are you looking for flexibility specifically? Are we looking for strengths specifically, what are we trying to uncover? What's the goal there?
Yeah, so there's a few different elements that we look at. Ultimately, you know, in its simplest form, our assessment, the TPI screen and our assessment is based off of what we call the stability mobility model. So basically the body itself is an alternating pattern of mobile joints connected by stable segments. So if we look just really quickly through here and we can go a little bit more in depth, you know, time dependent, we look at the feet in the golf swing. Realistically, they're connected to the ground. We want those to be relatively stable. Yeah, there's been a lot of, you know, highlight on moving feet and things like that with Scotty and that type of stuff. But in general, we want the feet to be connected to the ground and stay relatively stable there. The ankles themselves, we want to be mobile. We want those ankles to be able to move specifically side to side. We'll talk a little bit about the other motions that are there and their importance. Again, you know, time dependent as we go on through. But as we make our way up, the knees should be a stable joint. The hips should be a mobile joint. The lower back doesn't have a lot of mobility there. But the upper part of the back, the thoracic spine, that's where we get a lot of our rotation from in the upper part of our golf swing. Our shoulder blades should be pretty stable. The shoulder joints themselves should be mobile. Elbows are relatively stable in the golf swing. Wrists need to be mobile. And then those hands, again, need to be stable because they connect us to the golf club. But that's kind of how it goes, you know, which areas are stable, which areas are mobile as we make our way kind of, you know, through that model.
Why is that important for our students to know?
Well, if there's any disruption along that pattern at one of those areas, if there's a mobile area that doesn't move very well, or there's a stable area or an area that's supposed to be stable that doesn't move
very
well.
Give me an example.
So let's say somebody doesn't have, very generally we see some of our male population hips aren't very mobile. So our juniors, our females, they tend to have some more mobile hips. Men's hips tend to be a little less mobile. If those don't move very well in the golf swing, there's going to be a lot more stress placed on the knees and or the back. So a lot of people play golf with low back pain. They come into us and say, hey, you know, I'd like to play more golf, but my back, you know, tightens up on me and things like that. But again, if the hips don't move well, that's a recipe for either tearing up your knee a little bit or tearing up your lower back. So again, if there's any disruption in that pattern, it's going to show up not necessarily at that area. It's going to show up at a segment above or below. In terms of like pain or injury or discomfort.
How often does the pain actually originate from where the individual is experiencing it?
No, again, it's because of some area that's not working well. So
almost 100% of the time.
Well, I mean, if you get hit with a golf ball, the pain's going to be where you get hit with the golf ball. If somebody hits you in the head with a golf club in your golf lesson, then you as the instructor, yes, is going to have pain in the in your head in the golf. In the head where you got hit with the golf club. But ultimately, if it's just repetitive things like that, you're just, you know, practicing, you're swinging the golf, you know, golf club, you're playing a lot of golf, ultimately where you have the pain in your body, unless it's something related not to golf, is oftentimes not the problem area. So we need to look elsewhere to find out what the root cause, or as you like to say, as far as the swing goes, the cancer is, and we try to attack that and improve that if we can.
And that's where the mobility stability model is so important to simply state you need the mobile segments to be mobile and the stable segments to be stable. And if one of those aren't, the other, they're going to be acting in a manner in which they were not designed to do.
Right.
And that causes injury.
Yeah. So as far as mobility goes, a lot of people come in and talk about flexibility. A lot of people come in and want a flexibility program. And you just ask that yourself. You know, what do you look at? Strength, flexibility, things like that. So flexibility is an important part of what we look at when we take people through the screen. But it's only, you know, one part of that mobility portion. So flexibility, very simply, is just your muscles' ability to lengthen and shorten. We take that a step further when we look at mobility and actually take measurements of joint range of motion. So the combination of your muscles' ability to lengthen and shorten, flexibility, as well as how well your joints move, we'll measure those measurements. Those two things combined make up what we call your overall mobility. And then the second thing, stability. So just to kind of, you know, break down what those things mean versus just the general picture that I painted there as we move through the body. You know, very simply, stability is the ability to maintain or control a movement or position. And there's a few different types of stability. So core stability is one that's very familiar with people. Core stability has, you know, been a buzzword for a couple decades as well. Oftentimes, there's a misconception of what the actual core is. A lot of people think about your abdominals, you know, your six-pack being part of the core. They're actually more of a movement muscle. So if we took the six-pack away, we're looking actually at your deep abdominal muscles, the ones that actually sit against the spine. One might even go as far as to take, you know, those core muscles and take those all the way down to the hip, and then those all extend all the way up to your shoulders. So some people might refer to that as your pillar. So kind of from your shoulders all the way down to your hip, and then all of those muscles that kind of line the front and back of your spine that control that position. Those make up, you know, what we would consider areas that would be responsible for your core stability. We have segmental stability. So what that means is stability around a joint. So can a joint move through its range of motion, and can it do so stably? So a lot of times people will come in and they'll have an area that doesn't move very well. And the reason it doesn't move very well is because they're not strong enough there. They don't have enough stability through that segment to be able to move it through its full range of motion. So that shows up as a lack of mobility. So when we take people through the assessment, we determine, is that a joint range of motion issue? Is there not a lot of motion there because the joint itself doesn't move? Or is it simply that they don't have enough segmental stability, strength around that joint to move it through its full range of motion? So a couple other things we look at as far as like stability, static versus dynamic. So when you set up to your golf ball to hit, that's largely kind of a static posture. You're getting into that same setup posture. You're kind of steady there. Some people get a little more waggly and a little more, you know, more dynamic sometimes, but that would be considered a static stability posture. A plank is pretty common there as well. So that's one thing we look at, is how well you can provide stability from a static standpoint, standing still or not moving. And then also dynamically. So can you maintain angles? Can you stay in your posture when you take a backswing? Can you, you know, stay in your posture as you get down into impact? Can you stay into certain positions as we take you through certain exercises? Or does your body kind of flail all over the place and things like that? So even though the golf swing looks fluid in nature, again, we know that certain areas of the body need to be still and stable to allow those moving parts to do their job. So that's ultimately what that stability mobility model means, is just, you know, do we have the proper motion in areas that need to move efficiently to making it a good golf swing and a good repetitive golf swing? And then do we have that strength and stability to make sure that we can repeat that over and over and over and keep ourselves safe and healthy?
So I might be jumping ahead a little bit, and you can tell me to hold off on the question, but by the time you're done with the physical screen and you've collected all of that data, can you definitively say, I know this individual doesn't do this in their golf swing, or I know this individual does this in their golf swing? Or, you know, obviously I work here, we take educated guesses all the time. And how often would you say you're right? And prior to answering that question, can you definitively say that after a physical screen?
That's a fun game we like to play, is what happens in the golf swing relative to what we see in the physical screen, and what do we see happening in the golf swing, and then what shows up in the physical screen. So the human body is absolutely amazing. It does some, you know, awesome things. It's like the best error detection device out there. You know, whatever AI, you know, screw you, the human body's way better. Anyway, but yeah, it's a fun game we like to play. So oftentimes if you see weakness in the lateral hip, if you see weakness in the glutes, you're like, all right, this guy might have some sway in his backswing. This guy might stand up, you know, have some early extension. So yeah, definitively, maybe not 100%, but I've been pretty accurate, you know, in a higher 90% threshold of, you know, being able to predict what I'm going to see in somebody's golf swing based off the physical screen that we see up top.
Yeah, I think we definitely get surprised all of the time. I think there are a few screens which can allow you to be somewhat definitive, especially when you're looking at wrist range of motion. I think definitely when you're seeing guys limited, you know, whether it's radial, ulnar deviation, flexion, extension.
Whoa, those are big words.
Yeah, I learned it along the way. Anyhow, don't throw me off because we know I'm sick and my brain's functioning at 20% right now. But anyway, what I was going to say is I think we like to play that game. Most of the time, we're pretty darn accurate. What I like to do when a guy comes in and we collect all his swing data, and I'm just looking at only his swing on the 2D video and some of the 3D stuff, you know, especially if he's got some specific swing characteristics, whether it's, you know, very limited rotation through
swing
the head.
Flaws.
Yeah, exactly. flying elbow at the top. I mean, there's definitely some obvious common patterns where I can say, hey, man, check out this. Check out his internal hip rotation on the right side. Actually, just check out his ability to disassociate. I'm really curious on his ability to stay in posture, if he can actually go and tilt anterior, go to anterior, and then move to posterior. And for anyone that doesn't know what that means, that's basically just doing cat-dog, if you're familiar with that, standing up. But yeah, I would say the exceptions typically go in line with our 11 characteristics. The exceptions come with guys that played a lot of sports growing up, where they've just got good eye-hand eye-hand coordination, good spatial awareness to where they really surprise you with their movement patterns, or they've just been playing golf from a very young age. But to where, yeah, the data that we recorded doesn't necessarily align with the physical screen. I'm curious to your thoughts on that. When the data and the screen don't align, what are some of the thoughts that go through your head?
That's a very delicate conversation to handle, because when you can identify specific physical components that are not allowing them to do the things they're trying to do in their golf swing, and it's because it's conceptual in nature more than anything, or just they might not be as athletic as they alluded to in their assessment or anything like that. So again, when I said at the top, I said, you know, we're looking at limitations. If there's limitations there, hey, you cannot get your club into a proper position at the top because you don't have external rotation of your right shoulder as a right-handed golfer. If you've got a ton of right, you know, shoulder external rotation, and you've got good scapular stability, and you've got good thoracic rotation, and you still can't get your club in the right position, I'm not sure what the hell's going on.
I was actually asking on the other side, to where the screen basically said they shouldn't be able to do this.
Oh, and they can.
But they are doing it.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's one of the amazing things. The human body is going to perform, you know, however it's going to perform. Like you said, like I said, it's an error detection, you know, device. So it knows that it needs to get the club into position A. Okay, I'm not talking about specific P1, P2 here. Just position A, whatever that is. It knows it's going to do something on the way down. And ultimately, the most important position at all is hitting that golf ball. So it's going to find a way to do it. So, yeah, we've seen bodies that, you know, there's no way you should be able to get this club in position. And ultimately, what it comes down to is just kind of peeling back that onion. And we look at the compensations they're making to be able to get it there. Yes, their shoulder might not move that way. But ultimately, do they have a ton of thoracic rotation? Are they making a small manipulation here? So that's where just watching videos, seeing golfers over the years, and working with thousands of them can help us kind of like peel that back. Whereas quick glance at the video is like, holy cow, how'd you do that?
Well, I thought you were going to take a little bit different angle, because my initial instinct is, oh, shit. Like, I look at the physical screen. He technically shouldn't be able to do that. How much concern is for long-term injury here?
Yeah, again.
And that's where I brought in sports, to where, you know, you take these really good athletes that played the baseball, played the hockey, played the tennis, played the rotational sports growing up, to where their athletic nature knows how to position in a stick, a racket, a golf club, to hit the ball in a specific manner because they instinctually know how, although the supportive structure around them, their body, isn't technically in a position to do that over a long period of time at high repetition.
Yeah, that's a delicate conversation, because it's like, if they're playing well right now, why would you want to change something like that? But again, if you talk to them, you know, about their goals, do they want to play well now? Do they want to play well for the next 10 or 15 years? Do they want to play well as long as their body and, you know, allows them to? That's just having a conversation, being open, honest. It's, like you said, it's our job to coach them. It's our job as the experts to give them what they need, not what they want. So yeah, it's like, okay, this is working well right now. Positions look great. However, I can tell you down the road, this, and this are going to break down. You know, I don't know which in which order, but ultimately you're going to suffer a shoulder injury. You're going to suffer some sort of discomfort here and there. They might actually disclose that, oh yeah, well, every now and then my shoulder does hurt. Oh, and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, that's part of the job. You know, finding the stuff that doesn't work well is easy. Trying to figure out what the underlying cause for some injuries and aches and pains are, relatively easy. But, you know, trying to break the news to somebody that, you know, their body's not moving great, they're hitting it, you know, phenomenal, they're getting into positions that are considered ideal, but they're doing so in a way that ultimately is going to lead to their game not being, you know, them not being able to play the game for the long term.
Yeah, I would just say, like, very rarely are we stumped to where a guy is swinging in a manner that doesn't 100% draw parallels to what we discovered in the physical screen. And then to the example that we just discussed, if we do have an individual that the screen doesn't necessarily support how well he moves within his current swing pattern, that he doesn't have some sort of evidence of discomfort, pain, fatigue in certain areas. Very rarely, and honestly, I can't even think of a time at this moment where I've been stumped to where this doesn't make any sense whatsoever, which, again, just is bringing value to the insight that we're able to gain through that physical screen, and why, at this point, I wouldn't even ever come close to even thinking about coaching an individual without knowing the results of their physical screen.
Yeah.
All right, so where does that leave us, Tommy? Obviously, we've gone through a ton of stuff here. Go ahead.
No, I just think, you know, going through a little bit more specifically, again, this could be multiple episodes. Don't want to spend, you know, all night here, but I think just going in a little bit more in depth into the different body parts, and just so everybody can understand a little bit more about, you know, what we mean by mobility, stability in those areas, what we're looking at specifically as we take people through the screen. So again, if we start with like the feet, you know, stable there, one of the tests we use is kind of a single leg balance test. It actually tests a lot of different things, but just seeing how well somebody can stand on one foot and see how well they can balance it. That tests, you know, stability in the foot, but it also looks at proprioception, looks at hip and glute strength. There's a lot of things there, but ultimately, you know, again, we want to see how well that foot can, you know, provide stability as it connects us to the ground.
And what I was just going to add is like that test in particular, like we do have data from elite athletes and specifically the tour. TPI has a really cool database to where, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was given the screen back in the day, when we did the single leg balance test, wasn't it right around where we have a guy stand on a single leg, other thigh parallel to the ground, closes his eyes. It was like 28 seconds on average.
Yeah, around 25 or more.
For any of you listening to right now at home and can stand up, I would say try that test, close your eyes and see if you can do it for 28 seconds. It sounds easy, but I think you'd be surprised.
And that's where a lot of our numbers come from. So as we take some of these measurements, we do some of these tests, we do have tour average numbers. Over the years, I've had several people come and ask, it's like, all right, what does the tour guy do? Like, what should I be able to do? I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's see what your baseline is and see how we can improve upon it. I can look back in my database and compare you to other people in that same, you know, kind of category or same cohort, if you will. But at the same rate, in my mind, I'm like, why wouldn't I try to achieve what the best players in the world have? That would give me the best possible chance to play the best possible golf. So, yeah, we've got those numbers. We know that there's differences between the different, you know, demographics we work with. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, juniors and females, a little bit more mobile. So they oftentimes need more stability work. The older male population or anybody that's working, sitting and things like that often needs a little bit more mobility work. But we always want to make sure we maintain that balance of mobility and stability. It's never just going to be one by itself that we look at there. But as we look at the ankles, so moving up from the feet to the ankles, we've got four ranges of motion there. We've got, you know, rolling the ankle inward, rolling the ankle outward. So if we've got some athletes listening to this, you know, the typical way that you roll your ankle, that's called inversion. Super important on the left foot for the right-handed golfer. That's your lead foot as you get through impact. So we test that inversion, eversion range of motion. That eversion is super important in the backswing for the right-handed golfer on the right foot, left foot for the left-handed golfer, because if you get that weight to the outside of that foot, that's just one more moving part. So we've talked about the timing equation a few times, and we'll continue to talk about that in subsequent episodes and things like that. But we're trying to eliminate variables. So if you don't have the ability to be able to roll that foot inwards, keep weight on the inside of that foot, that's the eversion range of motion of your ankle, that foot's going to go out there. It also reduces the amount of power production that you can produce. So that's super important. And then pointing your toes and bringing your toes up towards your shin, that has to do with your calf flexibility. So that has a direct correlation to how well you can get into your golf posture and then maintain that posture. If you've got tight calves, oftentimes you're going to end up with, you know, standing up out of it, you know, somewhere in the course of your golf swing. So as we move up to the knee doesn't do a lot. You know, if your knees are doing a ton in the golf swing, you know, maybe, you know, we want to reduce some of that motion there. We have seen athletes over the years develop a little bit more squatting and a little bit more extending. So the knee itself, you know, there is some motion there, but it's just, you know, but not as much as the other areas.
Yeah, so I would just say we just want your knees healthy.
Right.
And making sure that there's no pain. And that's where the feet and the ankles and the segments above, aka your hips, need to be functioning in a very specific manner in order for them to be pain-free. That's what I would say. Yes, they have a function. Yes, we want you to have the ability to have them move in a certain manner, but for most importantly, just we don't want them pain. We don't want any pain.
Right, and they're not driving anything, right? You know, they're just moving as a result of the other areas and not causing those problems. So hip range of motion, we talked a little bit about internal and external rotation. Those are the two main motions that are important to the golf swing. As we rotate into our backswing as right-handed golfers, internal rotation is important on that right side. That allows us to, again, keep that weight on the inside of that foot, allows us to not move laterally into the sway. I think a cool episode might be to, after we get done with this, is talk about some of these swing flaws, these swing characteristics, and like the specific areas of the body that, you know, contribute to them.
So. No doubt. And that's what I was just going to say, like as a listener and, you know, maybe some of the swing flaws in which we've already discussed. And as Tommy continues to go through the entire body here, you know, think about maybe some of the issues that you've struggled with and, you know, connect the dots. There's a reason why that probably started to move in the manner or not move in the manner in which it has. And maybe you're that individual that has taken a number of lessons over the years and just really have not had any success in moving the needle or really breaking through. And it's, you know, that's what's so cool about the screen is we're going to have answers immediately and direct insight on why that started in the first place and actually can answer you. Like, is it even possible? Can I make this change right now with how my body currently functions? And the answer might be no. However, what's cool through our programming is we can take those findings, build a program surrounded specifically to isolate that issue and improve it while the coach is training the pattern, but knowing that you won't break through until the body's going to function in a manner which supports that change.
Right, exactly. And we'll talk a little bit about kind of program development as we finish up here.
So we're at knees, you're at hips.
Yeah, we're looking at hips. So again, trail leg needs internal rotation, lead hip needs external rotation in the backswing, and then that flips on the downswing. So lead leg needs internal rotation to allow you to post and be able to get rotated through impact zone, while that trail leg needs some external rotation there. Lower part of the back, we refer to as the lumbar spine. It doesn't move a lot. Those vertebrae are super big. They're super big and chunky. They don't have a ton of motion there. That's why it's really important that our thoracic spine has a lot of mobility. Those vertebrae are smaller, so they have the ability to rotate more. So I always look at, you know, kind of the upper back and the hips as the two key areas there, especially with people that come in with low back pain. Oftentimes, again, one of those things I can kind of predict, if somebody comes in with some low back pain, tightness, history of back issues, oftentimes they're going to present with, you know, tightness in the
just
hips
like knee
from
pain,
a range.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, tightness in the hips and inability to rotate through the thoracic spine. So every time you make a backswing, every time you try to rotate through, hit a golf ball, that low back is just getting trashed because it's moving way more than it needs to, because the two areas that are supposed to be moving aren't doing their job. So they're picking up the slack there. As we make our way up to the shoulder, we talk about what's called scapular stability. So your scapula, your shoulder blade, there is important. We want a lot of strength around that shoulder blade. A lack of strength in that shoulder blade causes the shoulder blades to kind of migrate out, or kind of what we call, wing, instead of moving up and down. So if you can think about your shoulder blades on your back, or have your partner at home right now, you know, holding your shoulder blades, they should move straight up and down on your back to allow your shoulder to rotate the way it needs to. If you don't have strength there, those things tend to move outwards, limits your amount of external rotation in your shoulder, which is our next component, is shoulder range of motion. But more importantly, more, you know, specifically and selfishly for me from a fitness perspective, it puts a shit ton of stress across your rotator cuff. So anybody that, you know, has shoulder issues, we look at those two areas. You know, do you have range of motion? If you've got a ton of range of motion, but you don't have a ton of scapular stability, you're just kind of tearing up that rotator cuff as you're trying to make, you know, backswings and golf swings in general. So as far as the shoulder range of motion, I've talked about external rotation a ton. That's the most important one there. Internal rotation is a little bit important, but it's more horizontal flexion for that lead arm that comes across there. And then you need external rotation as you get up into your finish position. But we measure that two ways. So I really like to talk about this, especially in the assessment when people come through, to help just kind of pound home the relationship between stability and mobility. So the first way that we measure this external rotation in the shoulder, we have a person stand up straight up and down. They put the arm straight out to the side. They bend the elbow up to 90 degrees as if they're taking an oath, yeah, in the courtroom. So hopefully nobody's had to do that real, you know, recently. And then they go ahead and they rotate the forearm and the hand back as far as they can without leaning or rotating. So that's external rotation of the shoulder. We do that in standing. So that first measurement in standing just tells us how much range of motion do you have there in external rotation. Do we hit golf balls standing straight up and down?
Sure don't.
We sure don't. So in the next position we take them into is down into their
Some
golf.
Some do.
Some do, but we take them down. Ideally, they don't. So swing flaw. We take them down into their golf posture, and we do that same thing. So in their golf posture, trying to maintain that posture, they take that arm out to the side again, bend it to 90 degrees, rotate it back again as far as they can, and then we measure how much rotation they create there. We also take one more measurement. We measure how far they bend at their waist. So we've taken a measurement of external rotation in standing. We've taken a measurement of how far the shoulder rotates back while they're in their golf posture. And then we also measure how far bent forward they are from vertical at their waist. So we take that second measurement and the measurement of how far they're bent forward, add those two together. And that sum we compare to the first number. So the reason that's important is, let's say, just for sake of conversation, we have 100 degrees of external rotation. So 90 degrees is vertical, it's parallel to your spine. 100 degrees is a little bit more. Let's say you bend forward at your waist, 40 degrees to get into your golf posture. You have 55 degrees of shoulder external rotation, 40 plus 55, not a math major, but 95 degrees. 95 compared to 100 is within 10 degrees. So we want that sum of the amount of tilt you have or bend forward at your waist and the second external rotation measurement, we want that sum to be within 10 degrees. If you've got 100 degrees of external rotation in standing and you have less than 90, that tells us that you have good shoulder external rotation in standing, but you don't have the strength and stability, rotational strength, to be able to use that motion in your golf swing. If you have anything 90 or above or even beyond that 100 degrees, we know you've got great range of motion at that shoulder. We also know that you have great strength and stability to be able to use that resource effectively in your golf swing. So that's kind of a cool thing to see. See a light bulb, a lot of light bulbs go on because, again, we've got a ton of range of motion in an area, but if a guy can barely rotate that thing up, it's like you can't use it. You know, it's a resource that's not there and able to be utilized. So as we finish this up real quick, elbow doesn't do a whole lot in the golf swing. Trail elbow will bend a little bit to kind of set the golf club. Hopefully it stays close to your body on the downswing to stay, you know, relatively narrow on the way down there. You alluded and talked about wrist mobility a little bit before. Those big words you were throwing out there early on, but like flexion and extension of the wrist. So flexion and extension, also known as bowing and cupping, as I understand it, as far as the golf swing. So trying to keep that left wrist or that lead wrist kind of bowed, or we call flexed in the backswing. And then trying to do that down there, that trail wrist is extended to try and set that there. And then the radian ulnar deviation, the radius is over on that thumb side. The ulna is over on that pinky side. So being able to kind of, you know, move your thumb up towards your forearm there helps you set the golf club there. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I didn't mention is your cervical spine. So your neck also needs to be kind of mobile there. So it kind of gets, you know, pushed to the side. It's very, very important. You know, any neck problems are career enders. So it just doesn't, doesn't flow along kind of the model that I had put there, going from the feet all the way to the hands. But cervical spine, ultimate, you know, it's super important having mobility there. They always say keep your eye on the ball. If you have a problem or a hard time keeping your eye on the ball, might stem from some cervical rotation issues, but we pay a huge amount of attention there.
No, I think that was great and sounds like obviously a ton of stuff to go through. Obviously, I have a ton that I don't want to add to that, but to keep the conversation flowing, you know, is there anything else you want to say regarding, you know, what we collect and in regard to the assessment, or is that it? Or what happens from there? We've got all this data collected. Cool, great. You have limited external shoulder rotation. We know that it might be more of a stability issue than a mobility issue. Like, what else?
Man, I'm glad you asked because there's way more than that. Actually, one of the first things we start with in our assessment is what we call movement patterns. And again, essentially what movement patterns are is what you've trained yourself to do by swinging the golf club over and over the course of your golf career. And then basically what you can do from a coordination standpoint. So looking at those, you know, movement patterns, that coordination helps create what we call separation in the golf swing. So a couple of different things that we look at. First off, we just look at, you already talked about that pelvis movement front to back, that cat dog kind of moving your pelvis forward and back. We do a test for that. We want that pelvis, you know, to be in a good neutral position when we start. So when we talk about the different postures of the golf swing, we've got an S posture, we've got a C posture. I think we talked about that a little bit, but again, that can be another episode. We talk about some of the physical connections to why those things happen. But we want that to stay relatively neutral, but then we also want it to move in a certain direction to be help produce some power for us on the way down. So we do a test just to see how well can you move that pelvis front to back on your own, just in a standing posture, just to see, you know, can you do it there? Because if you can't do it there, you've got no chance of doing it once you're trying to move a club at 80, 90, 100 miles an hour to produce some speed there. So upper body disassociation, we call it. So when we look at the backswing, right, the shoulders should rotate further than the hips in the backswing, ideally. So we do a test. Can you just put your arms across your shoulders? Can you keep your lower body as still as possible? Rotate that upper body back and forth. And if you can, great. If you can't do that, then you're going to have a hell of a time trying to do it once you get a club in your hand and you're trying to focus on hitting a golf ball and do so as powerfully as you can, not as lightly as you can. And then the third component that we look at there is your lower body disassociation. So no matter how much torso rotation you create in your backswing, how much separation, aka, you know, X factor, people might have heard of X factor or K factor, we use a K vest to measure some of those things that we can't see with our eye. No matter how much separation you create at the top, meaning how much further your shoulders rotate than your hips, if you can't create more separation or get your hips to rotate ahead of your shoulders on the downswing, you're going to lose a lot of that power at the top there. So we simply have people get into their golf posture, put their hands across their shoulders. Can they rotate their hips back and forth? Get a ton of people in here that have been to Hawaii because they do a real good hula dance side to side. But we want to see those hips move in a rotational manner, round, like inside of a barrel versus just moving side to side. But those movement patterns are super important to us. Again, those are what kind of lead to like proper sequencing and proper coordination of how things should move in the golf swing, both in the backswing as well as on the downswing. So a couple other areas that we often see and we check out, hamstring and low back flexibility. We have people come on in, stand with their feet together, legs locked, see if they can touch their toes. You know, yes, that looks at your hamstring flexibility as well as your, you know, low back flexibility, but it looks at your hip hinge. So that's one element that, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of. So they try to get into their golf posture. Some people do it by bending at their hips. Some people do it by rounding up at their upper back, getting into that C posture. So we look at hinge mechanics. One of the things I often love is just when somebody comes in, they're like, they can't touch their toes, right? And they're like, yeah, I've never been able to touch my toes. I'm like, really? You're a decent athlete, you know, you look, you know, pretty easy. Yeah, my hamstrings has always been tight. I was like, all right, so you give me a couple seconds here? Sure. So what I'll do is I'll have them prop their toes up onto like a half foam roller or maybe like a 5-pound weight, just something to get it up, you know, inch, inch and a half. I'll have them reach down, touch their toes maybe 6 to 8 times. Then I'll have them step over that foam roller or put their heels up on those weight plates. I'll have them do that same thing again. And then ultimately I'll move them back onto the floor. And more oftentimes than not, ultimately they're touching their toes for the first time in their life. And, you know, they can't get their credit card out of their pocket fast enough to sign up for a program. But, you know, it's not a magic trick, but they think it's a magic trick because they've never touched their toes before. But we've warmed up the muscle. Yes, because we've done, you know, several repetitions of that exercise. But ultimately what's happening there is we're doing some low level core stability work by propping their toes up. We've pitched their center of gravity backwards. So as long as that guy doesn't fall over, he's throwing on some muscles that he may not have had on before to prevent him from falling over backwards. Also with those toes up, it also helps those hips translate backwards ideally. So we might coach him through that a little bit, creating a little better hip hinge. Then we'll pitch him forward, heels up, toes down. And again, you know, as long as he doesn't fall over on his face and we don't have a liability case on our hands, you know, he's kicking some muscles on the other side of the body to keep him stable. So when we get him back down on the floor where we originally tested him, now he's got a little bit better hip hinge mechanics, but he's also got some muscles activated on both sides and ultimately helps him get down to those toes. So that goes back to something I said a while.
Man, we thought the golf swing was complicated.
But that takes me back to something, you know, I said before is like this guy might have perceived himself as having like tight hamstrings for his entire athletic career, you know, might not have been nearly as fast as he could have because his, you know, stride length was much shorter because he's got tight hamstrings when ultimately all he needed was a little bit of coaching in terms of like stabilizing the core front to back and ultimately learning how to hinge his hips a little bit better. So
no, I think that's important to note. It's uncanny how many individuals come in here and they have this conception or understanding of what they're doing and why they're doing it and why they believe that's the case. And which again, what's really cool about this physical screen and all the tests that we put them through is like, hey, we're going to guarantee you we'll find you the answers. Not only will we find you the answers, we're going to put a plan together to help, you know, develop a solution to help and improve whatever function we've decided to improve. Okay.
I'm almost done.
You're almost done? I think so. Oh, we're not past this part yet? All right. Okay. Keep going.
Well, I'm just, you know, I want to make sure that I'm thorough, just like I am in my assessment.
I love it. I could listen to this all night. It's just the temperature was about 10 degrees cooler in here.
So, you know, you started off with a question about, like, what's the most important areas of the body? I'm actually getting to your question. The answer to your question. And the glutes are very, very important. So we do some glute testing. We look at some lateral hip strength. But ultimately, the glutes and the core.
The buttocks.
The buttocks, yes, sir. So we do some bridging. So if anybody's, you know, been in therapy or, you know, maybe an exercise where you just lie on your back, lift your hips in the air, that's how we test the glutes very simply there, just to see whether they activate and they fire. But those are one of the most important, you know, if you wanted to take a top three, they're definitely in the top three important body parts in terms of their relationship to the golf swing and athleticism in general. We look at the lats, so the big back muscles. We look at lat length. Lat length determine, you know, how much width and extension you can create in your golf swing. So tightness in the lats will cause a very, very narrow and kind of vertical and steep more golf swing versus being able to get the arms working away from you a little bit. And then one of the other things that we look at and are very in tune with is actually a component that the golf pros gather for us is that KVAS data. So looking at the KVAS data. That's, again, you know, measuring some of the things we can't see with the naked eye. So looking at those rotations, looking at the speed of those rotations and the sequencing. So again, that sequencing is very, very important to consistency. How often do we have people that come on in and want to, you know, want to be more consistent? They want to hit it further. I mean, you know, just about everybody mentioned those things as far as their goals. So looking at that X factor or that K factor stretch, I think you did a little slingshot analogy, or you like to talk about that slingshot analogy in terms of how that relates to the golf swing.
Yeah, I mean, whenever we've talked about X factor and X factor stretch, I've kind of asked students to kind of look at the golf swing like a slingshot. The handle's the lower body, the rubber part is the upper body, and the backswing, we're trying to get those segments as separated as far as possible, right? That's pretty powerful. But you want to take it to another level, you're going to shove the handle forward before you let it go. And that's the X factor stretch.
Right. So that's getting that lower body to rotate ahead of the torso, ahead of the arms, ahead of the hand, and then that trail, that club head trailing behind.
I do want to highlight, you know, I think it's interesting if some of the listeners didn't pick up on it, but you talk about some of the two most important body parts when it comes to the golf swing. I can't help but think that the knee-jerk reaction for so many golfers is range of motion, flexibility, the ability to move, but which isn't necessarily wrong, but you highlighted two pretty big muscle groups. You highlighted the glutes and you highlighted the lats, which those are muscles. Those are when people think about, they think of stability, right? Which is correct. But with that proper stability, then it lends itself to better range of motion and mobility. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the glutes and the core, you know, in general are kind of the king and queen. And I think those lats are often overlooked and pretty important. So
I can relate to that. I can tell you I've spent the last few years getting my glutes a lot stronger. Not only do they fill out my pants a lot better, I definitely feel so much more stable and so much more strong over the ball. And that's just proof in the pudding. Okay, we just talked about a ton. We seem to gather what, I don't know, some might define as an astronomical amount of information really about every single body part. All right, what the heck do we do with it?
Well, first of all, you know, we communicate any of those movement issues that have a direct correlation to those swing flaws to the student and to their coach. So
immediately, like, what we like to do is we like to look at, hey, we're going to give you a summary of our swing findings. We're not going to go through every detail, but here are some of the highlights, the big components, the biggest red flags, the biggest concerns, the areas in which we're probably going to address immediately. And then we like to tie them together with some of the highlights in the physical screen that have a direct correlation to that swing flaw.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. If a person's come in and said, hey, I've struggled with this, I've tried to work on this, I've taken some lessons for this, we're going to tell them exactly why they haven't been able to achieve that in the past. It's oftentimes directly tied to some sort of physical limitation. So anybody that aspires to come on in, you know, for a perfect screen and still isn't very good at golf, that's not what you want to aspire for. You want to come in and get an answer as to why you've been struggling for all those years. And we'll provide those answers, like you said, as well as the solutions. So we also want to identify any swing characteristics that are not due to a physical limitation. So that gives the student and the coach kind of a green light to, hey, let's get after that right away. Because again, like you said earlier, you might have some ideas of what you want to do with this golf, with your student from a golf swing perspective. But I might tell you to kind of pump the brakes because, again, we know golf is challenging. It's got a steep learning curve. The last thing I want you to do is get into the bay with this student for the first couple of sessions and try to go after some things that, you know, you are not going to be able to achieve because their body hasn't had the time to make some changes there. So that's where that communication piece is key, making sure that you know what the limitations are so you can get into that first lesson, make sure that your expectations match up with reality, make sure that the students' expectations match up with reality to make sure that you guys start to build that good rapport, that good trust versus you trying to attack something they can't do. Next thing you know, they walk out of that lesson. I just dropped $3,300 at SmartGolf and this guy's trying to do the same thing that the last two guys have done. And and he's trying to do a little bit differently, but I still can't do it, So we want to kind of walk that tight line and make sure that, we're introducing him to the program, but we also want to make sure that we're going down the right path as far as that goes. So their body shouldn't hinder the progress moving forward with the desired swing changes. If it is, then we'll talk about what that progression should be. Hey, we're going to be working on X, Y, and Z in the gym gym. Once we kind of get that moving a little bit better, then we've got the green light to kind of move forward with that. So we educate our students on what we have kind of coined as some GGBs, some guaranteed get betters. So we've been working with golf athletes for the better part of 13, 14, 15 years, whatever it may be. So we've developed some things over the years that, work pretty well with, a high percentage, high 90s, almost 100% of our clients. So it's like, hey, if you do these on a daily basis, you're going to make some progress. So at least start with these. Our GGBs can help, them get started off on a good foot, but then we also can build them a more comprehensive home program to help address some of those other areas. But like you said, we take those big three elements, tie them to our GGBs, get them started on those, as well as, it'll guide how we program in the gym. So we'll put together a program for the first 3 months with that person. Ultimately, in my mind, I'm thinking this person's going to be with me for years. So I'm going to, kind of in my mind, put together a program of how I'm going to train them over the course of 12 months. Definitely want to see them make some fast progress. So I'm going to catch some of that low-hanging fruit. Might use some of those magic tricks like the toe touch pattern movement. Might use some box presses for the shoulders to see some improvements there real quick. Again, not a magic trick. It's effective and it works well, but it also helps, them gain some trust in the process and like, hey man, I've seen some pretty quick results in a really short period of time. I want to work even harder at this, and this is definitely worth my time and whatnot. So, we talk about things that we do in the gym. Not everything needs to look like a golf swing. Some things will, some things won't, but you might be, doing some band walks. You might be lying on the ground doing some bridges. You might be doing some things that look absolutely nothing like the golf swing. But what we'll do is we'll talk about what they should feel like or how they're working an area that's relative and creating hopefully a feeling for you, or at the very least just here's how it correlates. We don't want you to sway. We want that, the weight to stay on the inside of your foot while you're doing this single leg RDL with this kettlebell in the offhand. Try to keep your weight there to keep your balance and so you don't fall over. And then ultimately, it sounds kind of corny, but, we want to create healthy habits for the long term. So, yes, people are coming to us to get better at golf. Yes, people, that's their number one impetus. But ultimately, we want them to be healthy for the long term so that they can practice, play this game, this wonderful game, for as long as their finances and their life allows. So,
yeah, I was just going to say, listen, we're not ignorant to the fact that everyone that walks through the door and far from are going to have the strength, the mobility, the stability, flexibility as the tour bros, and which is the database that we pull from. But the reality is, worst case scenario, you might not ever get to the strength and range of motion in which we so desire. But worst case scenario, you're going to be able to maintain what you currently have, at the very least, for a much longer period of time. Worst case scenario, you might play golf with less pain. Worst case scenario, the shitty pattern you currently come to the table with becomes easier for you, right? Because some guys are just like, hey, listen, here's my body. Here's what it is. Build myself a swing around it. Well, sometimes, most of the time, we don't really have a choice anyway but to do that unless we're going to risk injuring you. But you can imagine there's some guys probably listening to this podcast like, listen, I don't want to do the fitness part. I just want to, just build a swing around what I have. Okay, fine. Well, chances are you probably have already done that. Okay. But to the question I was asking, I'm like, do you want to be a C version of yourself or an A version of yourself, man, and how long you want to do that for, right? So there's so many darn benefits to the physical screen. Obviously, it's the insight that we're able to gather, but the solutions that we're able to offer. And, you know, like I said, when I lay out the worst case scenario, in which I did, that's still a pretty damn good scenario if you truly love this game and want to play it as long as you can and for as healthy as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Couldn't have said it better. So you surmised that fairly well.
Well, it was mainly your show tonight, so I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the tip you got for our listeners?
Get up and move, you know? Do a little something. Do a little something for yourself. Shoot me a note. Ask for a GGB. I'll throw one out there your way. Or ultimately, you know, just come on in and get a physical screen. Get a physical assessment. If you're a guy you're working with from a swing perspective, or, you know, if you're just out there Googling things constantly and just trial and error, save yourself a little time, save yourself a little effort, come in and get some actual direction from some experts that will put you on the right road, and you won't regret it.
Love it. That was great. And I really enjoyed listening to you dive deep and unpack the physical screen tonight.
I didn't bring my scuba gear, but I did dive pretty deep, didn't I? Next time I'll bring my suitcase so we can unpack some more things. All fitness.
Beautiful. I think it makes a lot of sense, as you said, to go through a few of these items, a few of these screens a little bit more in depth, really dive into the golf swing, and then even talk solutions moving forward. I look forward to that.
Yeah, for sure. Get this.
Cheers.
A big thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Everything But the Tip podcast. Stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following @SmartGolfFitness. For additional episodes, updates, and exclusive content, check out our website at smartgolffitness.com. Don't forget to show some love, like, share, and subscribe to ensure you never miss out on the latest insights and engaging discussions. Your support means the world to us. Until next time, keep swinging and stay fit.